How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
That one is hammered to left. My goodness. He did hit it on the Lansdowne Street. Over everything. That's one of the longest home runs you'll see.
Now back to the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap on 95.7 The Game.
So that was Dave's call of the Wilson Contreras home run. The absolute moonshot over the green monster. And compare that to the Will Fleming version.
1-0, but first and third with two down. Contreras waits the pitch. He's swung on and driven way back. Wilson!
On the Lansdowne! 3-run homer! His 26th! He got him in his 3-1 Red Sox!
Rizzotto, can you do a Will Fleming impersonation?
Way back! Right field! Gone.
Yeah, it's basically just a Dave Fleming with a slight different.
Yeah, you can hear the Dave.
You can hear the Fleming in his voice.
It's like he was the fun younger brother, or older brother, or he was the partier in high school.
Yeah, Dave was the serious older brother.
Dave was doing his homework, and that kid was out crushing beers at the zoo.
Why are you back late? Why are you back so late? You're supposed to be back earlier. 9 o'clock's your curfew.
Well, you see, Dave, I was having some fun with the boys. Oh, man. What if just everyone in that family sounds like that? The kids, too. I want Dan DeVone to get invited to the Fleming family barbecue.
No, I'd rather be at the Tugboat family barbecue so we can eat for days.
That's a barbecue.
I like the big fellas.
That's Stanford barbecue. Those are the Stanford grad barbecues.
Is Will a Stanford guy, too?
I don't know. I don't know if Will's actually a Stanford guy. We'll have to look into that.
I don't believe he is.
Oh, okay. Good. He just went up.
There you go.
Two notches. Yeah.
It's an exclusive club.
Shut up.
There you go. I asked the question going into the break, because again, Rafi Devers made his return to Fenway Park last night and got a pretty good healthy amount of boos, and it's pretty safe to say that the Rafi experiment's not really going well for the Giants. And I don't know, Dan, you tell me if I'm off base here, but it feels like a lot of Giants fans draw a straight line from his arrival to the team to the team not being good since then. And yeah, circumstantially, yeah, it's very easy to do that. Do you think we're off base on doing that, or do you think there is some there to Rafi's arrival coinciding with the complete drop off the cliff the Giants have done since then?
Well, let's just break down your question, which is sort of interesting in and of itself. You just asked me that the Rafi Devers experiment isn't going very well with the San Francisco Giants. He's hitting well, Sam.
Yeah,
he's doing what it is that is expected. This guy can mash. He's doing what it is that the Giants wanted from the guy. So again, why would you phrase it that way?
Well, I guess the reason I'm phrasing it that way is because you acquired Rafi Devers for really at the end of the day one reason. You thought he would help you win a lot of baseball games.
Yeah,
and so the experiment was Giants plus Rafi equals wins. That was the hypothesis, at least, that the Giants scientists came up with in their lab down at 3rd and King Street. You know, they got this bubbling vat of Giants baseball. Let's add this vial of Rafi Devers to it and stir it up, and it'll bubble up into a winning baseball team. That was the hypothesis. They went through, they carried out the experiment, and the results were lots and lots of losses. So the scientific reasoning is, Giants plus Rafi does not equal winning. Maybe then that was the failure of the experiment. That is why I present the question in the way that I did, and I just use a lot of science jargon in there to paint the picture.
But here's what's fascinating. If he's doing his part and he's hitting the baseball, then why are we upset and why are they losing? Again, it gets back to maybe there's more to it.
I agree with you, Dan. And you look at the numbers of this team since that trade. Again, they were 41-31. When the deal went down, they're 92-126. Woof. Since it went down, but
bring back Wilmer Flores.
Well, let me ask you. Yeah, there you go. That's what we're missing. Who do you think has been worse for the Giants since the trade? The hitters on the team or the pitchers on the team?
Pitchers.
Yes, that's not very hard to figure out. So if the pitching has been bad since the acquisition of Rafi Devers, but the hitting hasn't. The hitting's actually been better since they acquired Rafi Devers. So, is it unfair then, I guess, to draw that correlation from the Rafi trade to the performance and saying that is indeed on Rafi Devers?
No. Listen, you can't pin one guy for the demise of a team. You can't do that for any sport, but especially baseball, when it's so pitching dominant and there's so many facets that go into it. But I guess the better way to phrase it is, how much has he helped? And is he creating, again, this is where I always turn to you because you have access to the locker room and you're there much more frequently than I. Is he the reason, or is he creating a bad energy? Is he cultivating the wrong culture with that baseball team? And as a result, you're seeing sort of this underwhelming play on the field, and that's putting it kindly.
Yes, and that's the theory that our own Steven Ruderman, once we wake him up, he is of the belief.
Is he asleep on the couch again?
The fact that he was sleeping on our divided sectional couch during the show last week. Guy sleeps more than anyone I know. He's like, yeah, no, I still need to sleep more. Must be rough life to be able to get that much sleep.
His phone might be off.
Of course.
Nothing is going through.
Of course.
Is he okay?
He's fine.
All right. I'm sure Ruderman's all right.
But no, I do think that's a fair question, especially when he's giving the Dikembe Mutombo, no, not today. No Jonna Cox on the base today. In Miami that one time. That does kind of create this.
Did you work on that?
No, just got off the cuff. I mean, it's not the first time I've done the Dikembe Mutombo impersonation. So, you know.
Did he finger wag?
I think he did actually do it. He did, yeah. He did the finger wave. No, I don't want to come out. He blocked Cox from coming in, so... It's very easy to look at that moment and think that, yeah, there's a dark cloud over this clubhouse because of Rafi Devers, to which I ask the question then, how come only the pitchers are being affected by it? Only the pitchers have been pitching worse. The pitchers have been worse since Rafi got here. The hitting, the lineup on the whole has been better than it was beforehand. Now, of course, Rafi's addition to that is juicing those numbers up a little bit. But I don't see it hindering Bryce Eldridge's development. Bryce Eldridge, whose locker is right next to Matt Chapman's and Willy Adames' is in the clubhouse, not next to Rafi Devers. But Bryce Eldridge seems to be coming along pretty well in his development. It didn't stop Casey Schmidt from developing into a great everyday player this year. Hasn't stopped Jung-Hoo Lee from developing into a guy who we're thinking, God, we're stuck with this guy for 6 years, to, man, I hope we can hold on to this guy for the full 6 years. But then again, so why is it only the pitching then is having the issues if Rafi is creating clubhouse issues? And even still, when I see these guys interact every day, I don't get a sense that these guys don't like each other. I'm sure there's guys who are maybe frustrated with some guys' performances. Like, I know if I were to truth serum Logan Webb, he would probably say that there's certain guys in that clubhouse who need to up their game a little bit. But how much of that is because of Rafi versus just maybe their own issues of underperforming there?
Yeah, and I think you can differentiate between having a good season and then not collectively as a team getting along. So again, I don't know, but I'm just very curious as to whether or not there's some division in that locker room and whether players show up wanting to play baseball and do the right thing and willing to do whatever it takes because they feel the right energy the minute they walk in. You know when a team has it, right? I always go back to that 2010 San Francisco Giant baseball team, which is a bunch of overachievers and guys that were sort of castaways, and they had that remarkable World Series run there first. And there was just the right palpable feeling, right? Like capturing that. But then there's the other end of the spectrum, and I don't know, when they walk into the locker room, whether it's the complete opposite dynamic of that and whether Rafi Devers is partly to blame, because there are people in Boston that are of the strong belief that Rafi Devers was cancerous in that locker room, and he was one of the reasons why the Red Sox struggled, and getting rid of him was the best thing that happened. The guy can still hit, but is there that vibe, I'm a big, big locker room guy that I believe that if you get it right behind closed doors, it translates to wins and losses.
And that is where I do think you can draw the line. Because I do think, yeah, he has, when he's kind of shaken off the manager, a first-time manager, a really rookie first-time manager fresh out of college, I do think that kind of sets a bad example for the younger players in the clubhouse in terms of how you act towards your manager. That being said, though, what about last year? This team started being bad last year. It wasn't just they were good last year, and all of a sudden this year they started playing poorly. Like, they started falling apart, Dan, right after Rafi arrived. And that was under Bob Melvin's clubhouse. Why don't we look at last year's clubhouse and think they were having issues and a dark cloud over that, you know, last year? We don't really talk about it. It's only this year where that dark cloud has been. We just ignore the fact that this team did still struggle last year with Rafi on the team when Bob Melvin was the manager.
Yeah, I don't necessarily associate Rafael Devers with the manager because, again, if this is amongst the players, you've got it. Whether it's Melvin or whether it's Vitello, whether it's whomever, you have to remove, because he's a player. Is if you get the wrong assortment of players, they have a much stronger and bigger effect than any manager. So it's usually removing that person that can change the entire complexion of the room.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't. I'm taking liberties by going there because I don't. We don't know.
Let me throw some on top there because I do think we're. And this is. I'm going to be answering my own question, I guess, in a sense here, and that. And again, I go back to this conversation I had with Matt Gage earlier in spring training where it's like Bob Melvin kind of had the respect because he was Bob Melvin. He's been doing this for 25 plus years. There's just level when a guy's been around that long, you just kind of fall in behind him. But even still, we saw the job that Bob did last year just wasn't good enough. Like 81 and 81, 80 and 82, that is not what is expected from this ball club. Now, they did finish a little bit stronger last year. I think they went 27-26 after the trade deadline last year. So it wasn't all awful. Bob also didn't have his team gutted as much as Tony has had here at this year's trade deadline. So I do think the fact that, I don't know, maybe it's kind of easier to, let's see here, what's the best way to phrase this? Like, Bob, just by being Bob Melvin, I think that kind of keeps guys in line. This is where I think the challenge of Tony is going to have to really deal with going into next year is, how to keep these older players like Tony, like Willie, like Rafi from, I guess he needs to get them to act basically like they did last year when Bob was here. And that's simply a part of whatever relationship Tony has with these two players has to be at a point where it's not detrimental to the rest of the clubhouse. That's where I think you can kind of start to draw the line, but I don't know how much it factors into the fact, like, I feel like I'm getting tied up in my words here. How much is it their relationship, Tony, Willie, Rafi, versus the fact that it is just also a bad roster on top of it? If this was a good roster with a better bullpen and there's more winning, does that make that relationship between the other three a lot easier to, you know, flow along well in a way that isn't detrimental to the team? I feel like I said a lot of words there that didn't add up.
There's no way of knowing.
Yeah.
It's really difficult to parse. I don't know. I just, is it coincidental then? That he's come here and the team has struggled, despite the fact that he came here with the reputation of potentially being disruptive in a locker room. I think it's worth exploring.
And there's an alternate universe, you know, the game I like to play, Daniel, Dr. Strange looks forward 14 million outcomes. I do wonder the outcome where this team actually wins baseball games after acquiring Rafi. Well, first off, they had won last year, Bob would still be here. So that's part number one. If they were successful this year, I feel like we're not talking about a relationship drama. Like, I do feel like the results are what created the atmosphere to win right now. I think anything was possible coming out of spring training. It's, you know, you ever do those pick your own adventure games when you were a kid? You know, you can go to
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. When they came out, they had two adventures they could pick. The adventure full of wins where everybody's happy, or the adventures full of losses where everyone gets pissed off at each other. It's a lot easier to be happy during a fun season than it is a not fun season. And I do think it was just one of those things where it might almost be coincidental. One thing goes wrong, another thing goes wrong, and it just starts to snowball and snowball and snowball. Then you just get into this attitude of just, well, everything sucks. I'm going to show up to work with a dark cloud over my head. That's where I think baseball players are very good at, is going into next season, wiping the slate clean. Whatever happened last year is last year. This is a new season. We're going to try this all over again. That is why if you are believing in this experiment, the Rafi Devers experiment, the Tony Vitello experiment, the Buster Posey experiment, because that's what these all are, what the Giants are doing is experiments. Experiments that they can get a player who was unhappy somewhere else and be happy here. The experiment of, can a college baseball coach be a major league manager? The experiment of, can a guy go from player to, you know, part owner to president of baseball operations and be successful at it? These are all experiments. All those experiments being successful is going to be dependent upon coming out of spring training with a complete new attitude and energy next year, and not the one that you just tripped on your face with coming out of this year.
I think what Tony Vitello has to do is that, listen, if indeed at the end of the day that Rafael Devers is the reason for this team playing so poorly because he's being disruptive in the back, in the locker room, and there are sects and divisions of the team that don't like him, and then there's finger pointing.
S-E-C-T.
Yes, thank you. And it's becoming really sort of counterproductive to what they need to do because they're not all pulling from the same rope and all of those sort of things. They're not all buying in. And if he is the reason, there's not much you can do about that. But the one thing that Tony Vitello can control is that he has, when he begins next year, he has to let everybody know, especially the younger players, that he is the manager and everything begins and ends with him. Whether that's publicly chewing out, and when I said publicly in front of the rest of the team, being very firm with Rafi Devers, that he needs to run out ground balls, that you need to play with a certain energy if you're going to be with the San Francisco Giants. And if he doesn't, that's on Rafi Devers. There's nothing you can do about that as a manager. That's about your GM and your baseball ops guys moving a player that they know is becoming an eyesore. And the same holds true with the other veterans. He's got to let everybody know who calls the
shots. The new world order, basically.
Yeah, Domus, listen, you are playing today, okay? And if you don't want to play, then we can talk about moving you out of town. That's what has to happen. If Devers continues to be Devers, you're sort of limited in terms of what it is that you can do.
Yeah. I did ask Buster Posey during his no good, awful, very bad dugout scrum back in June, once we got into the baseball questions. I did ask him, just like, why do you think this team has been so bad since the Rafi trade? I had zero inclination or zero expectation that he would say, oh, it's because of Rafi, that's why. Here is what he said, though, and you're not going to like the answer.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have an answer for you on why that has happened the way that it has. I mean, you can go back and look at Rafi's career numbers and, you know, make an argument that he's...
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Has been one of the elite hitters in the league, so I don't have a great answer for you.
Well, I'm going to vamp here for the next minute because we got a guy. You know, let's just put him right on, Steven. We only got up that much time. We woke him up. He's awake. It's time now for the Ruderman replay on the River Islands gas line. Steven, good morning. We were talking about your boy, Rafi Devers. How you doing this morning, bud?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing good, man. So the question we just threw out here, and this is a perfect time to have you on, why is it that we blame Rafi Devers for the team's performance since the acquisition of one Rafi Devers?
I'm not in the clubhouse that much, so I can't, you know, I'm not in there every single waking day. I can't read the minds of the Giants players, but it's common when you have a good clubhouse, when you have a good clubhouse and then you bring in a guy who is a cancer, for it to just absolutely decimate an entire clubhouse. And again, I can't say I know what's going on. I don't, but it's not a coincidence that last year's collapse started a week later. When you have a guy like Devers in the clubhouse, it's not going to be as good, and you've seen it throughout this year in the way he's behaved.
But you don't think that it also matters that the hitting's gotten better since he arrived and the pitching's gotten way, way worse? You don't think that that plays some sort of role in the team not playing well since then?
So I'm not saying it's all Rafi Devers, but it's definitely played a big role in it. And it also, you know, you said the pitching's gotten worse. It's a lot of factors, but Rafi's presence and the fact that he is not great in the clubhouse has played a big role in this.
But you're also seeing guys who've gotten, and Dan, if you want to jump in at some point too with it.
No, go ahead.
I'll keep sparring with them. You're still seeing a lot of development with the hitters. Bryce Elder's been looking good. Casey Schmidt's been looking good. You got a lot of young guys who are finding ways to develop. There's no kind of toxicity that's holding them back. Why is it only one position group that seems to be affected by this negativity and not the other?
I don't know if the pitchers have been affected by the negativity. And again, it's not black and white, but when you have a clubhouse that's not as great, which has obviously been the case this year, that can affect guys in different ways.
All right, let's switch up here. Tony Vitello is coming back next year. Steven, why is this a good thing?
I think it is a good thing. I think he's earned it.
There you go, Dan.
Dan, he was put in a really bad spot. He was given the worst bullpen in all of baseball. He was given a prima donna in Devers. He has done the best job that he possibly could considering the position he's been in. As I mentioned last week, he should not have come directly from Tennessee to the San Francisco Giants, but that's the position we're in. You can't fire him after 1 year. Sam, we've talked about this. You can't fire him after 1 year while Buster Posey keeps his job.
Here's the one thing I would say, because I've heard this so frequently and so many people have said exactly what it is that they've echoed the exact same sentiment, that it's, what do you expect him to do? He inherited the bullpen. He inherited the roster. This isn't on Tony Vitello. My answer to that is, well, Tony Vitello, while it's not his fault when it comes to the rotation in the bullpen and the season is what it is, but Tony Vitello has not made things better. In fact,
he's not. I agree.
Tony Vitello has made things worse in my estimation, and that is not a vote of confidence or a reason to bring him back.
I don't know if I would go as far as to say he's made things worse, so I'll respectfully disagree with you on that one, Dan. However, I do think it's interesting, you know, he had that team meeting after Sunday's performance, losing the season series against the Rockies. That's never good. And then they respond by losing 3 of 4 and getting blown out in their first game after the meeting on Tuesday, and it shows that, yeah, I don't think a lot of guys in this clubhouse respect him, and that is a major problem going forward.
I mean, they just not respect him. Again, Steve, this also just isn't a good team right now. You took away what little talent this team also had, and you're playing a Guardians team that I think is better than that 61-66 record they had, you know, indicates.
They are. And now they're playing a Red Sox team that is on fire right now. This is going to be an ugly weekend.
It's going to be an ugly weekend and part of an ugly series here. What's the replay call of the week, Steven?
Wait, Rudiman, who do you like better, Will Fleming or Dave Fleming when it comes to play-by-play baseball?
Dave Fleming's better. He's more experienced.
Okay.
There you go.
Do you know if Will Fleming is a Stanford guy?
Oh, I know. They're both Stanford guys.
Oh, okay.
Which rubs me the wrong way. Go Bears.
Right on. That's right. Oh, you're a former Bear.
I'm not. My parents are former Bears.
Okay. He calls Cal baseball games, though. That's his.
Did you go to college, Rudiman, or do you just sleep on a couch?
I don't need college. I have too much ADHD to get a college degree.
Right on. Okay.
What's our replay call of the week here, Steven?
All right.
Which Willy Adames error do we want to replay?
All right. Can I just make something up here?
Yeah.
Sure.
Do you?
Here's the pitch, and there's a swing and a pop-up. Willy Adames underneath it. He tries to catch it with his bare hand, and he dropped it.
And
apparently, his back injury made it to where he can't catch the ball with his glove.
There it is. There is your Rudiman replay of the week. Thanks for waking up and calling in, Steven. You can go back to bed now.
All right, guys.
All right, we're going to finish this up on the other side. An impromptu crossover? Is that what we're going to do? We'll finish up this Rafi Devers conversation. Hear what Steven Rizzotto has to say about it. We put him behind the glass last week. We're going to have him in the studio this time. Steven, have you done any stuff in the studio yet on air?
This is uncharted territory.
You're about to.
Let's go. On the other side, brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good.
Pasta, come here. I'm going to kiss you.
Now back to the best Giants talk in the Bay. The Orange and Black Weekend Wrap on 95.7. The Game.
Oh, impromptu crossover. Look at that, Theron. If you're seeing on YouTube, you're seeing Victor Harris making his YouTube debut. He's looking fresh, as always.
VHS.
I like that, VHS. Then, of course, this guy here in a Diamondbacks hat for some weird reason.
That's his go-to. That's your fallback.
He's wearing an A's hat yesterday.
I feel so weird.
We got to pot his mic number 2 up there, Victor.
I feel so there strange. This is like uncharted territory.
This is awesome.
I don't think I've ever been in here. No,
there you go. I don't think I've ever seen you in a Giant. I don't think I've ever seen you in Giants anything.
No, we're rocking the flannel today.
Yeah, there you go. You're very neutral, unfortunately. Because you grew up a Giants fan, right?
Grew up a Giants fan.
When did you decide to go neutral?
Oh, when I started doing media. When I started writing about the Giants.
See, there you go. He's able to remove his bias from the conversation.
It's the first thing you learn in journalism.
That's why I'm never going to be a beat writer, Dan. I do not possess that kind of objectivity there. And, you know, that's why I don't have it. It's also why I let the beat writers do their questions first before I come in with my nonsense. So
when you move to Pacifica, do they just issue you flannel shirts? Is that part of the attire?
No, but there are a lot of flannels in Pacifica.
Yeah, because you're freezing your butt off.
We're known for very few things. Taco Bell, the beach. Flannels.
It is a good Taco Bell. Wear your flannel to the Taco Bell, eat it on the beach. That's like the perfect Pacifica day right there. That's a good day in Pacifica, right?
Go swim, get bit by a shark.
Oh, it's great times out there in the oceans. Great times in the Giants clubhouse. No, that is not the case. Risotto, let's bring you into the conversation we were having in the last segment. The blaming of Rafi Devers. How much of that do you put the Giants record since the acquisition? How much of it is on Rafi? How much is on whatever atmosphere culture he's creating in the clubhouse? Because you go in that clubhouse quite a bit. How much is it on things that don't even have to do with Rafi Devers?
I don't think it has anything to do with him.
Really? So you're absolving him completely?
I'm taking him out of the equation completely. And the reason I say that is because I don't think that one guy is responsible for a team being 35 games under 500 since he became a Giant. I just don't see that as being, and he's not been bad. He has not been, you know, Boston Rafi Devers, but he hasn't been, you know, a league average. He's been above league average still. He's still been a really good hitter, and he's still leading the team in most offensive categories, and I can't wrap my head around him being the issue.
Okay, let's just phrase it another way. Has he helped or hindered the team since they acquired him?
He's helped.
Okay.
I think he's helped.
So then you poo-poo or discard all of it, because we don't know, all the insinuations that he can be disruptive behind closed doors?
I don't know that answer. Okay. But I have no reason to believe he would be. And even if he was, what kind of disruption would it be? Like, I feel like there's room for guys to be disruptive and still have success as a team, right? Yeah. I don't want to bring Barry Bonds into this. I don't think anybody really has caused the disruption or controversy that he brought when he played. But there's room for guys like that. I mean, I played with guys who I didn't necessarily like, but they put up numbers and you got along with them. And
well, the Barry Bonds point is that they never won with him. I mean,
let's look at it. This is an extreme example. Like a team like the Dodgers, who's full of superstars, full of egos, and they got two players on this team, and Shohei Ohtani and Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who, like, I've heard, like, when it comes to do their media sessions, setting them up is a pain in the ass. They have to be done in front of certain banners. There's all these certain things you got to deal with them. And they also have their own legion of media following them from Japan that can also act as a distraction as well, that could frustrate players when there's, you know, exorbitant amounts of media covering one or two guys. Doesn't interfere with them. No one talks about their clubhouse being an issue. Granted, they're winning a lot. That probably helps. But I think that kind of goes back to, are we having this conversation about Rafi and that culture and Tony and that relationship? If not even if they're a million games below 500, let's say they're hovering around 500 this year. Are we having the kind of conversations that we are now about this team?
Well, but they're not, is the bigger point. And when you make the analogy to the Dodgers, yes, they're superstars, but I think it's an assortment of good guys. Like, I actually think Mookie Betts is one of the most affable players in the major leagues. Freddie Freeman is too much sugar for me, but he's a good teammate. The same with, and say what you will about Shohei Ohtani. Is that going Hideki Irabu?
I thought you were going Matsui.
Matsui.
But the fact you go to Irabu before Matsui.
No, right? You know why I was thinking of Irabu? We were thinking about big, portly pitchers.
There you go.
No, but getting back to Shohei Ohtani, for the most part, is a nice guy. Same with Yamamoto. Now, I know it's a pain because I dealt with Ichiro and I dealt with his interpreter. And when you're dealing with yes, and Ichiro is the MVP, and there's a lot of that. But as far as teammates and as far as what it is that we were talking about as it relates to Rafi Devers and being a deterrent and buying closed doors, I don't think that's I think it's applicable to anybody in the Dodgers. As much as you hate the Dodgers and as good as they are,
well, I'm just saying,
I actually think they're a bunch of good dudes.
No, they are, but they also have avenues for distraction, though, but they've been able to overcome it. The Giants simply haven't. But again, you mentioned the good dudes. There's good dudes in this Giants clubhouse,
too. Yeah, no.
Like, I'll stand by Logan Webb any day of the week. I think Casey Schmitz, he's a guy who I just wish we could hear more from. I mean, he's come on Willard and Dibbs a few times. He's an incredibly fun guy. Drew Gilbert, obviously, very fun guy. Matt Chapman, very stoic, but also, you know, he's a good clubhouse guy. Jonah Cox, a very nice guy. Like, they got a lot of good dudes in this Giants clubhouse as well. It's just, the difference is there's way less talent in the Giants clubhouse as opposed to the Dodgers clubhouse.
The question is not whether those guys are good guys, but the question is whether Rafi Devers is not.
How do we know he's not?
I don't. It's all conjecture.
Yeah, I mean, we have one instance to go off of, and it was the Miami series, and that was not directed at any of his teammates. It was directed at Tony Vitale.
And I haven't seen any other issue with Rafi all year other than that one moment.
Yeah, it kind of makes
Unless
you
I'm
wonder why
it's, something in this moment.
It makes you wonder why it's even a conversation.
Well, it's only happened the one time.
It's a pretty big moment.
Well, it's a big moment. The reason I think it's a big conversation is because it's the Rafi moment compared with all the other moments that included Rafi or not, like Willy Adames forgetting how many outs are on the bases, and then the fact that Tony has covered for him. But there's this whole notion of, is Rafi a bad teammate? I've yet to hear anybody who's played with him and still plays with him or whatever come out and corroborate that. Now, we had Dylan Smith on, Spadoni and I did the other morning, and Spadoni asked, you know, hey, who's a guy on this team who's taking you under his wing and kind of helped you out here since you've arrived? And I was expecting him to say something like Logan Webb or Adrian Hauser or one of the other pitchers whose locker is next to him. And he's like, oh, yeah, Rafi Devers, without hesitating.
Who
he's like,
said this?
Dylan Smith.
Oh, okay.
Said Rafi Devers. And Spinoni's like, oh, well, tell me about your relationship with Rafi Devers. Here's what Dylan had to say.
Yeah, I feel like our relationship is pretty special. I mean, we hang out quite often. You know, we talk about the game of baseball. We talk about the highs and the low moments of what goes on in this game. You know, every day you're not going to have your best stuff, but how do you come prepared the next day, you know, to come out there and be better and to handle the situation better? And I feel like talking to a hitter that's been in these moments for years, you know, and that's been a really good ball player, I feel like you learn from those players, and it helps you as a player grow up with your mental side and with your, you know, your playing ability.
So that really caught me by surprise that of all the guys that Dylan Smith was going to point out and say, that guy's really helped me out a lot, goes to the biggest name in the room. That kind of surprised me a little bit.
I mean, I just go back to the point that we don't know of any proof on what has happened behind the scenes and what hasn't. And I have nothing that leads me to believe that Rafael Devers is a bad teammate.
Well, you have Boston to go by.
Yeah, but was that more with management? Was that more with Craig Breslow and Alex Cora? And I think he's not reason number one. He's not reason number two, three, four, five, or even six as to why the Giants are not good this year.
I think there's definitely understandable frustration towards Rafi Devers from this fan base, though, because of, like, as well as he has been hitting, the problem with Rafi is throughout the rest of his career, he's going to be overpaid. He was given a $295 million contract, basically $300 million, can be paid $28 million a year to play baseball for the rest of his career. Those are numbers that say you are the guy that they build a lineup around. Those are that's the kind of contract that says you make this team go. That is a contract that says you will be in Cooperstown as a Hall of Famer someday. Rafi Devers, for as well as he does hit, he doesn't hit at enough to carry a lineup. He does not hit enough to where you'd say we're building everything around you. He doesn't hit enough to be a Hall of Famer. He's hitting enough to be like, yeah, you're in the Hall of Very Good someday. And so I think that's always going to, you know, lead to some frustration that this fan base has with Rafi Devers. And I do think it's going to impact the opinion that we have that maybe he is part of the reason why this team is struggling. It's because he's not going to be the guy that the contract says he should be.
I think the best version of Rafi Devers on a baseball team, if he's not your number one.
If he's your number three, I think.
Yeah, I think then you've got you got a legitimate shot, or you get a good baseball team.
Yeah. I mean, that 2018 team that he was on, he was 21 years old. It was his first full big league year. You had Mookie Betts, who at the time was the closest thing to a modern-day Willie Mays. You had JD Martinez, who had an incredible season that year as the DH. He was an outfielder, because their DH that year was this guy named David Ortiz, who Was the Ortiz still on that 18 team still? Was that
he was Dodgers? Gone by then.
Was he gone by then? Okay, yeah. So JD Martinez was a DH on that team. But yeah, you had Mookie Betts, you had JD Martinez, along with Rafi Devers on that team. When Rafi's your third or fourth best option, that probably is the better situation than here, where he's the best hitter on a team. Playing a ballpark doesn't really do a whole lot for offense either. That I think that plays in a worth a mention as well.
I think that's a great point. And the reason why is because I think if we could say one.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
Thing about Rafael Devers, we can say this for sure. He's not a good leader. And I think it's because he doesn't want to be a leader. I think we've seen him with the media. I think we've seen him kind of be, like Sam mentioned, be a third or fourth guy on a team. And he doesn't necessarily need to be. I feel like when you have guys like Adames and Chapman and Logan Webb to some extent, he doesn't need to play the role of being the face of a franchise, which is something that he's never really wanted to do, mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned. And he seems like guys, and Dan, I know you covered A-Rod. And A-Rod
lived in the same building.
Lived in the same building. And A-Rod was one of those guys. Remember, I think it was, you know, very infamous of him to think that if I put up numbers, then I'm going to help the team win. If I get my 50 homers and 130 RBIs, then my team should be good. That was the way he thought. And I think Devers is the same way. If I hit, you know, 45 doubles and 30 homers and driving over 100 runs, then I should be able to look up at the end of the year and see my team in first place. I feel like that's his way of going about it.
Rafi Devers and Tugboat Wilkinson in like a cooking tutorial YouTube show. Like that would be, that's what I want to see.
Cooking
like,
with the big boys?
Yeah. You know Rafi's
got. Embracing the girth?
And Rafi's got a good appetite, shall we say, but he's probably.
I like the big fellas.
Whatever his desired cuisine is probably a little bit more international from Tugboat. And so they could cook at Rafi's one day, and Tugboat could get introduced to foods that maybe he's not familiar with, and then you go crush some mac and cheese over at Tugboat's. Like I think this is we're on to something.
I think we're putting some together here. I'll talk to SFG Productions and see if we can get that going here
on a Tugboat.
Let's love it on the bay. I love it. let's talk to Matt in San Jose. He's got some thoughts on Devers as well. Matt, what do you got? You're on the wrap.
What's up, fellas? How you guys doing?
Doing good.
Say hi to Pasta.
Oh,
hey, Matt.
Pasta, you're incredible, brother.
You're even better, man. Wow.
Oh my goodness. But anyway, so the thing about Rafi Devers is just this: the Giants fans have always wanted a big name star. It's been Harper and Judge and Otani and you name it. The Giants have been in on everybody. They always get second or third. And we're never the one that gets taken to the dance. But if you look at all those contracts, the year that there was four shortstops out there, the Giants didn't get a single one of them. They ended up with Willy Adames last year. Every last one of them is underperforming. The big-name stars get these fat contracts. They underperform. Juan Soto got dang near $800 million to hit .285 and the same number of homers. Like, we're just – Shohei Ohtani got $700 million to hit and pitch, and he can barely stay on the mound. We got Aaron Judge, he can't stay healthy. And then you look at every other contract. Dansby Swanson, not good. Trey Turner, not good. None of them are performing. So this is what happens. When guys get albatross contracts, they're going to underperform for the value you're paying. This is exactly what you get. And Devers is another example of that. Willy Adames is another example of that. Matt Chapman is another example of that. They got paid based on what they used to do. They've aged into what they do now. The sense of urgency to be super great the way they've always been is not there anymore because they already got paid. So that's just the way it is. If you want big name contracts, you want big name players, you're going to have to deal with it being not as big name as it was from whence it came.
Now, good call there, Matt. Thanks for calling in.
Guy he left out, although he's not a shortstop. What happened to Kyle Tucker this year?
Oh, what a shame.
Lindor, too, could fall under that category. I know he was a trade.
Oh, but, yeah, he's fallen off, too, with the Mets. I mean, that is part of it. I'll take another part of it. To his point, a lot of other guys on this team have not performed. Let's not forget, after this trade was made, they made the trade. Obviously, Kyle Harrison was part of that trade, as we all remember. Part of the reason why they chose Harrison was because they think, oh, well, we got Hayden Birdsong. You know, we got one of our young pitchers. We're still good. They dealt from what they perceived to be a position of strength between Birdsong, Harrison, and Roop. At the time last year, you had three young pitchers that you felt very, very good about. What's happened since then? Hayden Birdsong's arm fell off. Landon Roop's performance has fallen off. Kyle Harrison, who was never quite healthy, kind of figured himself out in Milwaukee after Boston moved off of him. And in the meanwhile, the Giants' pitching is completely cratered since then. I mean, since that trade, the only young pitchers you've really had come up, Carson Wisenhunt, who I don't see it. I don't think it's happening with him.
Trash.
Blade Tidwell, where the nicest thing you can say about him right now, it's early. Let's give him some time. The early results have been eh. We'll see what he does later today against the Red Sox. And that's about it. You got Carson Seymour, who's probably a middle reliever. The only other guy they really gave a shot to in the rotation in that time, in terms of quote-unquote young guys, is Kaiwei Tang, who's mediocre for Houston right now. It is a reflection of the fact that, yes, has it not gone well since Rafia showed up? Yeah. Part of that because they've gotten very bad pitching. They've gotten very bad relief work. And they've not developed anybody. Their farm system has been horrible at churning out pitchers. And I think that's been exacerbated as their rotation kind of fell apart due to injury last year. They had nobody who could come in and fill those gaps.
Hey, Bossa, speaking of Adames, I'm really excited about these middle infielders they have. You had an opportunity to go out to San Jose last week?
Last weekend, a week ago today, I went to San Jose and I saw the San Jose Giants taking on the Fresno Grizzlies. Fresno, by the way, Triple A city, but they have a single A team now. I don't know.
It used to be a Triple A.
Totally a Triple A city, Triple A ballpark. But I saw Joshua Gonzalez, who's MLB.com's number one ranked prospect. He's 18 years old.
Yeah.
And I saw Luis Hernandez, who is the number two prospect.
He's 17,
they're both shortstops.
Right?
He is a little younger. He might be newly 18. Joshua is almost 19. But Joshua was playing second. Hernandez was playing short. They alternate. And they're pretty legit.
Really?
They are legit. They have, defensively, they are a joy to watch. They have incredible hands. Joshua Gonzalez is so smooth. Luis Hernandez is so smooth. There's one play that stood out. There's Joshua Gonzalez was at first base. There's a runner at second. Hernandez was at the plate. Both runners were on the move on the pitch. And Hernandez with a base hit to right. The guy at second scores easily. Hernandez is heading for third. The outfielder throws the ball in for the Grizzlies. Fresno Grizzlies throws it in, not expecting a play at the plate. He thinks Gonzalez is holding a third. Gonzalez, without missing a beat, flies around third, throws the helmet off, and scores standing up.
This is on a single?
On a single. He was running on the pitch.
He went first to home?
First to home on a single to right field.
And so go ahead, sorry.
The outfielder had no idea he was going to score. Oh. So he threw the ball in the second. It was a lazy throw, and Gonzalez just took off.
Do they jump out at you when you go and see them? Like, you can recognize that there's a star there?
There's aura. If you were to line them up without knowing any of them at all or their backgrounds or anything. And I hate to use the term ball player because I think it's so cliche. Oh, that guy's a ball player. But you could tell like when guys just look the part.
Yeah.
And
I'm
feel like both of them look the part.
Yeah. Joshua Gonzalez, real deal then.
There's the first baseman too. Yeah, real deal. And there's Lindor comps there defensively. And, you know, there's always the question when you play up the middle, can you stick a catcher? Can you stick in center field? Can you stick at short? Both of these guys could stick at short. And it's a good problem to have. The Giants have like five of these shortstops. It's a good problem to have.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming, and they're coming very quickly.
Well, yeah, what's the timeline, Sam?
You say quickly, you're still probably 3-4 years away.
They're
coming
quickly.
That is
maybe a little bit sooner here. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're probably 28, 29 is when you start seeing these guys matriculate up, which is partly why you still need Willy Adames, as he is still your, unfortunately, best option at shortstop for the next couple of years, unless you do dip into the free agent market, which, again, you're not going to do because you got the two that you mentioned. You also got Johnny Level is there as well.
Love
Gavin Killian as well is in there. You got.
So wait, why isn't Parks Harbor up now?
That's the guy who I want. I want to see. And like, I want to see Parks Harbor. I want to see Nate Furman. I want to see kind of anybody but Buddy Kennedy playing third base right now. Parks can play third base. I don't know what you're waiting for on him, because he's a Rule 5 guy, too. He's a Rule 5 risk, so you need to get him onto your 40-man sooner rather than later, or else you risk losing him in that draft, though. But again, you mentioned those four shortstops here, and I've said this before, like, only one or two of them are actually going to stay in the middle infield.
Yeah.
One's going to be probably in the outfield at some point or at a corner spot. One of them's probably going to get traded, too, at some point for pitching or other help here. And, yeah, four really good young shortstops like that. Maybe you want to throw in five if you want to throw in the kid that they got out of San Diego. I'm pulling up his name.
Joneil Hernandez.
Joneil Hernandez, yeah.
Put one of them in center field.
No, my guess is, yeah, you're going to have one at short, one at second, one in center, maybe one and left or something like that, yeah. And then one's going to get traded. That's what you'll see with these guys, but that's how this is with prospects here. So that is what you want to see. Really quick before we get out of here, let's go to Dwayne in Stockton. Dwayne, I'm going to give you about 60 seconds here to wow us. What do you got? You're on the wrap.
Hey, what's up, the homies, though?
It's going good, Dwayne. It's going good.
Hey, I think that Devers has to take the major weight because he's the major piece. That's how it goes, bro. Manager's got to take the weight, too. But, you know, back in 10, 12, and 14, when the Giants were winning, it's because they had chemistry. It was a real thing with that team. When they had each other's back, one guy doing bad, other guy doing well, clutch hits, things like that. That's what this team doesn't have. They're not a together team. So something has to change. The last thing that we need is a slow start again next year.
Mm-hmm.
If we play baseball next year, you know how bad it's going to be if we start out 5-15?
It's going to really suck, Dwayne.
You know, I think that main thing is, so that takes me to Vitello. You know, you can't run it back, bro. Got to get a real manager. He doesn't command respect, and the team really hasn't tightened up their play. And that's my main thing. Balls are still dropping in the outfield. Guys are scoring from second base on an infield hit. Guys are scoring on a wild pitch.
Mm-hmm.
That's 2 feet away from the plate from third. Haven't seen that before. Yesterday, Webb imploded. He walked the guy with the bases loaded and then plunked the guy with the bases loaded. So my problem with Vitello is that it hasn't gotten better. Yep. And you just can't run it back, man. You don't go all in on a trash hand. But that's all I got, man. Have a good weekend, fellas.
Appreciate you there, Dwayne. Good call. A good call to end the show. And again, they are going to run it back next year. And simply put, again, we're pulling through our heart out. Steven, what's the one thing that has to be different for Tony next year if this is just not going to be an abject disaster?
Definitely the respect factor. I think that there's not enough of control. As Dan said earlier in the show, I don't think there's enough of a handle on some of the veteran players. And not anything that needs to be like disciplined or per se, but just a situation where Willy Adames is starting off a month not great or starting the season not good and plays 20 games in a row. You have to be the one to say, hey, it's a Sunday day game. Take a day off, instead of saying, oh, you don't want the day off. That's fine. You won't get one.
Yeah.
No, take the day off. So, yeah.
You know what he needed to do to get control of that clubhouse? After Rafi Devers refused to come out of the game and then eventually did and didn't let somebody slap him on the butt, one of the bench coaches.
Mm-hmm.
He needed, and I'm talking about Tony Vitello, as Rafi Devers' big behind came out of that shower, he needed to go in front of everybody and just swat the hell out of that thing. You don't want to be I'm going to swat it because I own this
Mac,
team.
You bare ass coming out of the shower. You know what, Dan? I'm going to raise you. The moment where Tony, you had to bench Willie when he forgot the outs. At the end of the day, that's the moment I come
Devers
back
as
to.
Well.
Like, I think if you benched Willie in L.A., then you don't even have the Devers thing later on in the year. But that's kind of how I look at it. That's the moment where...
Adriana going to review your appearance today?
She might be watching. She might be listening. She probably will
say...
She didn't
want to call in?
She already asked me if I'm dressed like a slob. Mm. So
she needs to fix that. So
yeah.
I'm sure she will at some point.
Does he look like a slob?
I think it looks fine. Then again, I dress like that. I've had past relationships trying to dress me up, too. It's all part of the process.
I came here expecting to be a producer.
Mm-hmm. We do it 95.7. We just throw curveballs at people.
You're next, VHS.
Oh, boy.
There we go. That's Victor in the back. Way to contribute there, Vic. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in this morning. Went a little bit later than we usually do, but hey, we love talking Giants baseball. Here on the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap, we'll do it again next week. And don't forget, Dodgers suck.
I like the big fellas.
Later, dudes. Later, rip.
Amen.
There is nobody like...
On Reddit, true crime doesn't come from journalists. It comes from the victims, the witnesses, and sometimes the suspects themselves.
Every Tuesday on Crimes of Reddit, we read these posts out loud.
I'm Sabrina Deanna Roga.
And I'm Alexis Linkletter. One of us brings the story, the other goes in blind, reacting in real time, just like you.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Crimes of Reddit, available now wherever you get your podcasts.